Well, hello everyone. Another unscheduled video from me today. Quite rare for me to have three in one day, but this situation called for it. I'm going to be talking once again about the failed astroturfed push of the term woke right and why it has been such a catastrophic failure for Konstantin Kissin, James Lindsay, and whatever other lolcows try to push this. Now, this is the third video I'm making on this topic because I've been following the story. I first made a video on the 3rd of October about this called Woke Right, James Lindsay is Mental. That was when he was talking about the secret plot to summon the Archangel Michael and, Ahriman and all the rest of it. Then I made another video a couple of weeks later called What I Learned from Konstantin Kissin's War on Free Speech. Now, both of those garner quite a lot of interest. And again, not usually the sort of thing I focus on this channel. And both of those were unscheduled videos like this one. This is also, somebody pointed out, it's like a trilogy that I've made here. But it's an interesting situation because here we have two people who I think are somewhat inorganic and somewhat astroturfed by the system for one reason or another, who have tried to cash in their clout, if you want. They've tried to cash in their social and moral cachet with the audiences they've built up. And they've tried to affect the discourse in a direction that they want. And they have faced an unprecedented backlash. They have experienced utter rejection from many, many people in their own audiences, and indeed from neutral observers. For example, Tim Pool, who is quite a good weather vane to show you which way the wind is blowing, if you want. Bob Dylan once said, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. That's quite right, Bob, but sometimes I find it helps. And Tim Pool's a pretty good weatherman, I think. And he said, James Lindsay is the woke right, the right hand of the left. Smarmy and dishonest takes in an attempt to adhere to some kind of social orthodoxy, along with the rest of the former liberal cohort who desperately desire to not be called conservatives. So this, to me, is a pretty strong external indicator from somebody who I do not actually consider to be part of the quote-unquote online right, Tim Pool. He is, someone who just kind of goes with the flow a little bit more, in my view. This shows that it's failed. It shows that people who they would have hoped to have persuaded by this were not persuaded. All week I've been watching a buddy of mine, Carl Benjamin, the owner of the Lotus Eaters, and all of the Lotus Eaters fighting with James Lindsay. I saw Reverend Calvin Robinson talk about how he doesn't think woke right is a term that's going to appeal to anyone or going to get over. And I've been thinking about, like, what was it? Why did this fail so dismally when other astroturfs in the past have succeeded? Why has this one in particular failed? And this is what we're going to be looking at over the next 20 minutes or so. So here you have these two influencers, James Lindsay and Konstantin Kissin, who made their names on what they were discussing here at the Oxford Union. This house believes woke culture has gone too far. So both Kissin and Lindsay rode the wave of what was called the culture wars and the backlash against woke, okay? That is how they, that's why they're famous in any single way. And they basically took or they leached off the audiences of other people who had a problem with wokery, and they tried to give some guidance as to why, you know, why woke culture was a thing at all. Now, I happen to disagree with both James Lindsay and Konstantin Kysin about the origins of woke. I think their analysis is wrong. But this is actually irrelevant. Whether they are correct or not about woke is irrelevant to why almost nobody is following them in this kind of push to make, quote unquote, woke right a thing. It's not going to be a thing. Spoilers, everyone. This is not going to work. Right? Where if Tim Pool is calling it, if Carl Benjamin is pushing against you and Tim Pool are pushing against you, it's not going to happen. Okay? It's just not. You're not going to win that one. You know, those are kind of two people with lots and lots of followers. But, you know, I've seen almost nobody on the next few rungs down, in terms of follower count. And we'll talk about why that is in a second. Essentially, these are two people who are liberals, as Tim Pool was talking about. They want some sort of return to, quote unquote, classical liberalism, something I've talked about in the long history of this channel. I, too, was once a classical liberal like 6 years ago. Okay. But anyone with any honesty, anyone with any integrity, anyone with any room for intellectual and moral growth, much as I have and did, came to see the issues with classical liberalism, came to see the flaws in the position, and whether through realist analysis or just experience of world events or otherwise, came to see that you cannot just keep on double and tripling down on individualism. Individualism. Okay. So let us now get into why I think this has happened. So I replied to Tim Pool and I said, it is fascinating to watch how unsuccessful the woke right push has been. I believe that some of these people like Lindsay and Kysin don't have a true dedicated fan base like many of us. Their audiences are drive-by traffic and not fans of them per se. I'm sure that Catherine D, who's someone I know on Twitter who's been on the channel before, who looks at fandom and looks at internet culture, so she's kind of an expert in this area, has a technical term for this phenomenon. Well, I did ask Catherine D about this directly. She offered up the idea of the anti-fan, which is actually something a little bit different. And she agreed that this does not quite sum up what I'm trying to get at here. And I'm going to talk more. I'm going to drill in further into this idea I have about two different types of social media influencer. Okay, because this is quite a new thing, which is why I think, the regime and various agents of containment, like the ones we're talking about, are struggling to deal with it. Okay, I'll go into why. But an anti-fan, according to Catherine D, is basically someone who's built up an audience based around a kind of hatred of the thing. Now, you see this in Star Wars fandom. This was certainly a thing in wrestling. Like, there were loads and loads of people who would watch WWE Raw or SmackDown every single week. But they did it mainly to complain about the thing. So they were kind of anti-fans. So there are lots of pro wrestling anti-fans whose thing isn't actually liking pro wrestling. It is complaining about the direction of the product. Right. And there are tons of those. If you're a wrestling fan, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So that's an anti-fan. But I don't think that Kysin or Lindsay have, you know, they may have some quote unquote anti-fans, but I don't think that that is what they're experiencing. Now, it just so happens that in the lead up to making up this video, I was going to make it anyway. I happened to watch a stream by Vox Day. Some of you may remember him. And he was wondering out loud about why it is that somebody like him, who in his own view is intelligent and has good analysis and makes correct predictions, has such a smaller audience than some of these figures that we're talking about. Let's watch the clip of Vox, and then I will give some answers.
I'm not gonna lie. I do find it somewhat puzzling, I guess would be the best way to put it. I don't find it amusing. I'm not offended, but I do always find it interesting how, no matter how accurate your predictions are, no matter how good your analysis might be, most people would still much rather listen to a Joe Rogan. They'd much rather listen to a Ben Shapiro. I have to admit, I don't really understand why. I mean, it's okay. I don't expect to be able to understand everything, especially when it comes to people. But if that's what people are looking for, I mean, I don't really know what people are looking for when they turn on, when they tune into like a Ben Shapiro. What are you looking for? To have your, I mean, maybe you're just looking to have your existing vanilla Republican views confirmed. To hear a lot of people tuned into Jordan Peterson to listen to him say absolutely nothing. To the extent that Jordan Peterson ever said anything, the stuff that he said was just abjectly stupid.
So, yeah, that was Vox Dei. Then he starts to go on and rant a little bit about Jordan Peterson, who he's had a long time problem with. But that was him wondering, like, why is it that, these people get all the views? What are people even looking for when they watch, like, a Ben Shapiro or somebody like that? Well, I've developed a little theory here of two types of quote unquote influencer, okay? Now, the first type, which I think pertains to Ben Shapiro, but also definitely pertains to James Lindsay and Konstantin Kysin, is that, they have high volume of views, but no genuine fans. Okay. This is to say that while they may have a lot of viewers and even be famous, quote unquote, which means a lot of people know who they are, no one follows them. Okay, you can be a viewer of Daily Wire, or you can be a viewer of Trigonometry, or you can watch interviews with James Lindsay. I don't know if James Lindsay has his own YouTube channel, but I don't think he does. Double check that. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But lots of people may watch these people. That doesn't mean that anybody actually likes them, anybody actually really, really follows them. Okay. Then you have a second type of influencer who may have a high or a low volume of views, but these people have a base of hardcore fans. This is to say that while they may not be famous, quote unquote, that is, not everybody may know them. Those people who do know them tend to be genuine fans of theirs. That is to say, they have a dedicated following. I hope you can see the distinction between these two things. And I find this interesting because if the definition of a quote unquote influencer is to influence the behavior of other people, it may be that, let's say, 10 people of my size, I've got 100,000 subs here, of whom not everybody who's subbed to me will be like an academic agent super fan or a dedicated hardcore fan or something like that. But some portion of you are, right? Same with Carl. Now Carl's got a bigger channel than me, and he has the whole operation of the Lotus Eaters. But Carl is somebody who, through years of work and years of building up an audience, does have a hardcore base of genuine fans. Okay. Let me think of some other people. Vox Dei, who I talked about just now. Now, he mentioned that he, some of the times, he has streams on his own platform where he may get as little as like 50 people watching him. Sometimes he gets up to 700 people watching him. Now, in the overall scheme of things, that may not seem like a lot, But those 700 people or so who follow Vox Dei, they really follow him. They really take what he says on board in a way that the tens of thousands, millions of people who listen to, who tune in to the latest trigonometry to see whatever Douglas Murray is saying this week, do not actually follow Kissin. Same with Lindsay, same with Ben Shapiro, and many, many other people who are kind of quote unquote influencers, but they're not terribly influential over those people who watch them. Okay, and this is a difference. Now, this is actually something that interests me as somebody, I sell the trivium here and I look at modes of persuasion, especially in foundations of rhetoric. And so I think long and hard about these topics because they interest me. I also, I mean, as somebody with a YouTube channel, I'm often struck by the sorts of messages I get sent. People send me really heartfelt messages saying, like, you have profoundly changed my life and things like that. And part of me is touched by that. And part of me thinks, and there's another side of me, the antisocial kind of grumpy old man side, which is like, I don't want any of this type thing. But it is interesting, right? It's interesting from a human psychology point of view. I find that if you have successfully changed somebody's mind about something, they tend to then like really trust your judgment on other things as well. Okay. And this is actually a two-way street. You can actually, somebody can get into a mode of really trusting you on something. And then over time, you may profoundly disagree on something and they'll lose that trust. So you can actually go in and out of this. Now, in classical rhetoric, there are these three modes of persuasion: the ethos, the pathos, and the logos. Okay. Now, on our side of things, like if you think of typical Ben Shapiro, he pushes a lot on the logos. Lots of my videos appeal only to logic as well. And that is, why foundations of logic, remember, it's one whole part of the trivium, is logic. And we often, on our side of the aisle, focus on the logic. On the left, they tend to actually focus on the middle one, the pathos, which is inspiring an emotional response, getting your audience to feel. The left, especially because there's a lot of women on the left, but also they're care and harm based using the Haitian approach. They tend to focus on the feelings. How does this make you feel? We saw an atrocious attempt at a pathos type argument during the US election when Kamala Harris, oh, Kamala is brat. She's bringing joy. Do you remember joy? This was like an entirely vibes based, feelings based approach. And I mean, it failed. On other occasions, the left have actually succeeded because they've been able to inspire pathos, pity, the emotional response. The right typically is not so good at that. They tend to lean more on the logic and the logos side, although some parts of the right are quite good at getting the angry response. Daily Mail, think of that, some of the slop accounts I've talked about. They're good at farming outrage, right? So it's a different type of feeling, but the right is quite good generally at inspiring that type of emotion, the anger response. But over on this left-hand side is the ethos. Now, if you think about left and right, the left actually do have a hidden form of ethos. I've always said that the left have lists of good people and lists of bad people. And you can actually go from being a good on the good list to the bad list, and from the bad list to the good list as well. Okay. It's possible to, but there's like an unofficial list of good people who are fellow left wingers who you can listen to. And if you know any leftists, they're very, very like this. If anybody has any reason to be on the naughty list, that's an automatic reason that you cannot listen to anything they have to say. Even if that person is making good points or they're telling the truth, that leftist is shut down. They're not open. You could have exactly the same bit of information and you put it in the Guardian or you put it in the Daily Mail. And if you show that person it from the Daily Mail, they wouldn't listen to it because it's the Daily Mail. Right? But they would listen to it from the Guardian because it's trusted. It's a trusted source, whereas the Daily Mail is that's on the bad list. Okay? I remember I had a student once who, what did they want to talk to me about? Nick Land or something like that. And they said something like, oh, well, they did sully themselves by going on Joe Rogan. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Well, what's so bad about going on Joe Rogan? Student was taken aback because they're so used to that positive reinforcement loop of the good list and the bad list. Because in left-wing land, Joe Rogan is on the naughty list, right? You see how this works. Now, interestingly, Joe Rogan is a little bit different from the Ben Shapiro. You know, Vox Day mentioned Shapiro, and he met Joe Rogan, I think, is different because he has built up trust with his audience. He has a kind of parasocial relationship with a lot of his viewers. So even though he does an interview show, he inserts enough of himself so that even though Joe Rogan's got a huge audience of millions of people, a lot of people feel like they might be able to hang out with Joe Rogan, okay? And a lot of these second type of influencers I'm talking about have this kind of relationship with their audience where they've opened up a little bit about themselves. Certainly, I've done that over many, many hours of shows and so on. You know, I give a little bit of my personal life. I give a little bit here and there, not deliberately, just because, you know, I'm talking, I'm trying to explain things. And along the way, you reveal little bits about yourself, okay? And people tend to relate to that, okay? People do not relate to somebody who's just like perfect, okay? So if you only ever show yourself as being like strong and perfect, people don't, that they actually need to see some flaws in there, okay? So if you tell a few stories where you have a bit of a comeuppance, for example, or where you were not in the right, or you made a mistake, or you tripped over or something, right? Or, you know, a time where you lost. All of these sorts of things help people relate to you, okay? And the thing is, it cannot really be manufactured. It just kind of is. It's authentic. And that is how people end up trusting you, even if you've never met them. Okay, this is they call it a parasocial relationship. That's one thing. But it's also just a kind of authenticity thing. Okay? And you then trust that person because you feel that they're real. Okay, so people, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think so. I think people feel that Joe Rogan is real and authentic. You may not agree with all his takes, but he's a real guy. Whereas people don't feel that about Ben Shapiro. They feel that they may be getting an act with him. Same with Kissin. And again, I'm not sure how much of this sort of ethos relationship James Lindsay has with his audience either. Okay? You can establish personal credentials and you get your audience to trust you. Now, people think of credentials of things like, oh, I've got degrees, I've got qualifications, I'm the professor of this. I'm the professor of that. I have a job title. Okay. I mean, that's one way of establishing credentials, but that's only kind of like level one. Level two, three, four of ethos is all of these other things I'm talking about here. Okay. That you're a real, genuine person who has kind of had the rough with the smooth as well. Okay. And you can actually see this in politics. Donald Trump, okay, now Donald Trump is probably the most famous man in the world, but people feel that he's authentic. He doesn't always present himself as perfect, and he is not like a system man. That is why so many people love Donald Trump. And they love Trump in particular, not some policy platform. Not, you know, you cannot abstract it out to a set of bullet points. This is what I was trying to explain over weeks and months to Pedro Gonzalez, who supported Ron DeSantis and his run to be president. Ron DeSantis tried to do Trumpism without Trump. Okay, well, Trumpism as a set of bullet points, as a political philosophy, as a set of policy proposals, doesn't work because the heart of Trumpism is Trump himself. In particular, do you remember he said about I could shoot someone in the street and my guys would be there for me because they're loyal to him. His views may change. But those people have decided, I trust in you. Okay? And I mean, in the time, now I'm not saying that every single person with a YouTube channel is like a miniature Donald Trump, but it is the same principle that you have trust with a person in particular, even if that person ends up changing their mind about all sorts of things. In the time I've had this channel, I've changed my mind about all sorts of things. As has Carl in the time that he's had his channel. And yet, those fans, there are some fans who have been there from day one because they don't follow you because you're a conservative or because you're a classical liberal or because of, you agree with X, Y, and Z. They follow you in particular, just like the Trumpist follows Trump in particular. And this is really what I'm trying to get at, as to why the woke right push has failed. Because while kissing Lindsay, likes of Ben Shapiro, may have people who follow them because they agree with their takes, right? Or because they're both conservatives, or because they're both classical liberals, or whatever else. I'm not sure how many people follow those people in particular. Does that make sense? I hope it makes sense. All right, I think that's enough for today. It's a really interesting area, this. And if anybody has any materials on this, I'd be interested to look into it more. Not just because I am academically interested in this, because I sell the trivium and I'm interested in modes of thinking and persuasion and logic and so on. But also, I'm kind of like personally interested in this as someone who's been on YouTube and actually has experienced this myself. I mean, I reckon you could probably play a little game. You could go through your subs list and you could be like, this is somebody who I actually have this ethos relationship with, and I follow them in particular, right? Not because I necessarily agree with all of their takes. Or because I politically agree with them, I'm invested in him as a person or her as a person versus those people you follow just because you're on the same side or just because. And I mean, in my own habits, I follow people in particular, even if I disagree with them. Dickie Spencer is an example. I disagree with him on almost everything. He is basically a liberal at this point. I mean, he's not really, if you really understand what he's saying, but I just he's one of those people who I think, well, he's always got something interesting to say. Do I trust him? I mean, that's another interesting question, maybe not. Trying to think of some other examples. I mean, Carl, I like him as a friend. He's a buddy of mine. I trust him. Do I agree with all his takes? No, I don't. we always disagree on stuff. And yet there's a difference between him and many other people I could think of. Lindsay and Kissin being two of them, because I'm not convinced they're genuine, authentic people. I feel there's a level of astroturf to them. So many, I mean, you can play your own, you can have a go at your own examples. I mean, there are other people I've mentioned, I haven't mentioned, like for example, Nick Fuentes, right? Now, he is someone who lots of people are repelled by, but nobody would deny that he has a core, hardcore, dedicated base of people who do really listen to him. And I've met some, I mean, I believe he bots his followers and all the rest of it, which means for me, there's reasons not to trust him, right? But there are people who absolutely do trust him. And that is strong. Now, here's the thing that I've rambled a little bit here, and I will wrap up in a second, but I really must get to this. Here's the thing that interests me. when it comes to this question and politics, okay? I remember there was a book by Bertrand de Jouvenel. He's got one, which is called On Power, which is the one that everybody talks about. But he's got a second book, Jouvenel, which is where he tries to come up with the perfect formula for what is politics. It's called The Pure Theory of Politics by Jouvenel, okay? And his formula is something like, when a man is able to influence a man to act. When a man is able to influence another man to act. When A is able to influence B to do something. Okay. So for Jouvenel, one of the cleverest people ever to write on politics, one of the most insightful political theorists ever, in my view. I wrote a chapter on him in Populist Illusion. It's certainly someone you should read on Power, if nothing else. Well, he thinks that the core of politics was the ability to influence. And I find it fascinating that we live in an age of influencers, social media, quote unquote, influencers. And yet the total number of people who follow someone is not necessarily an indicator of their political power. Because a stronger indicator of political power, according to Jouvenel, would be your ability to actually influence somebody else to do something. Okay? Now, I am not suggesting that any of us on YouTube are at the level of, well, if I command you to do this, you will do that. Okay? Not quite at that level. But still, there is smaller type of commands, right? So if you want to put it in a pure political sense, James Lindsay and Constantine Kissin commanded their followers to label certain other people as quote-unquote woke right. And a lot of their followers came back and said, no, we're not going to do that. And a lot of their peers, a lot of their fellow quote-unquote influencers pushed back on them. And then neutral observers said, heh, those people who pushed back when you won, you didn't get anywhere. You didn't influence anybody in this sort of behavior. You failed. Lindsay, you failed kissing. Now, James Lindsay, because he is an idiot, is actually currently declaring victory right now. I've watched him today. He's crowing about a victory. He is delusional. He is not one at all. Everybody will be watching this going on. If Tim Pool has seen it, everybody else has seen it too. So this is like a double loss because there are two levels of influence too. You can influence the plebs, the people, you know, just the minions on the ground. Or you can influence fellow elites too, okay? Now these two characters, Kissin and Lindsay, have actually done quite well in general terms at influencing fellow elites, if you want to put it that way, right? They've won the support of various different people. It could be that they were put there in the first place by those same forces. It could be. I don't know exactly their stories, but they have won a certain amount of elite influence, okay? But this push and the pushback from likes of Tim Pool and Benjamin and others shows that there's actually a limit to that. There is a limit to it. And those same elite forces or whatever may be looking and being like, actually, I don't know. These other guys seem to command a lot more respect than you do. These other guys seem to have like actual social and cultural cachet. You guys are getting nowhere with this. Your audience is laughing at you. Maybe you have no political power, you guys. And maybe these guys do have more political power. It's an interesting phenomenon. And it's something I'm kind of watching with interest. All right, I think that'll do for now. I'll be back tomorrow. I've got my long-awaited TV tropes video, which I know some people are looking forward to. Otherwise, have a good weekend. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.